Well, you know God.
God is good to me.
Say yes.
Yes, he's good to me.
He sacrificed his life that I might be made free.
He made
my path to shine. He with me all the time.
God said,
he saved his soul of mine. He's so good to me.
You know God.
God is good to me.
Say yes.
Yes, he's good to me.
He sacrificed
his life
that I
might be made free.
He made
my path to shine.
He with me
all the time.
God said,
he saved his soul of mine. He's so good to me. You know God
is good to me.
Oh yeah.
Yes, he's good to me.
He sacrificed
his life
that I
might be made free.
He made
my path to shine.
He will
be with me all the time.
He saved
his soul of mine.
Good morning. You got to love that song. That's what you call soul. We all got souls. And we all have an interest in the topic today. It's teeth. I've been waiting for this one in a week or two. I'm going to bring on my good friend, Dr. Randolph Aguilera, and we're going to do teeth talk. But today we're going to get into the history of it. So you have options even before you listen to my good buddy in a couple of weeks. All right, this is Straight Talk on Health. If you didn't know, if it's your first time, get to the website, www.straighttalk.cc, and hook up the archived shows. Because I think, as you guys are finding, I'm always going to be talking about prior shows, because one show builds on the other, and that way I can go deeper with you. So if you follow me over the weeks, you're going to note that every week I can tell you more and more, because you are getting educated. So it's not a superficial plan here. All right. Now, you've noticed some people can eat sugar, donuts, etc., all day long, and they don't get cavities. And you brush 3 times a day, and you floss, and you do all the right things. You limit the amount of sugar and carbohydrates refined that you put into your mouth because your dentists tell you that that's the right thing to do. Well, it really is the right thing to do, except you still get cavities, and they don't. What's that about? Now, I've researched this. I'm a tooth fanatic, and I learned the hard way. And I can tell you that in the literature are perspectives in dental history that offered us far more comprehensive perceptions of why some people get tooth decay and some people don't. And you got to know it. And today you're going to get it. So the first thing I'm going to bring up is a little tidbit. It's about the drill. Little things. It's so fascinating. Little things. Drilling the teeth. The conventional dentist uses a drill that produces 350,000 rotations per minute. Now, high-speed drilling, and yes, there are options, causes heat damage as you approach the pulp cavity of the tooth. And that heat damage is the beginning of the root canal. In addition to, at that speed, 350,000 rotations a minute, at that speed and the heat produced, you get what we call a negative vacuum pressure. And that begins to fracture the dentin tubules of the tooth. That's something we're going to talk about a little later, because you've got to understand the dentin tubules to really understand what's been left out in the history of teeth. So right from the beginning, dentistry's evolved, and it didn't always work like this, but it's evolved into techniques and practices that in the cost-benefit analysis we may have to question. And that high-speed drill is definitely one of them. But I want to give you a little bit of tooth anatomy, all right? The white part of the tooth, and you know this, is called the enamel. Generally, everyone understands the white of the tooth is the hard part. It's where you get your cavities, and it's called the enamel. But here's the good part. Under the white part, the enamel, is a softer part of the tooth called the dentin, D-E-N-T-I-N. And running through all the dentin, the soft enamel, so to speak, are millions upon millions of tiny canals or passageways called the dentin tubules. The dentin tubules are going to play an unbelievably big role in the history of dentistry and how we truly should resist tooth decay. Now, these dentin tubules, they have a fluid running through them, and this fluid removes infection and, more importantly, delivers nutrition to the enamel. And we're going to build on that later. So you got to understand, enamel, it's hard. It's like hair, right? Except one thing, it's alive. It's not dead. It's not your fingernails. It's the enamel of the tooth. And it can be remineralized if the dentin tubules are delivering all-important fluids with the all-important trace minerals. We'll get into that later. But back to the history. Couple of fun facts I find fascinating. In the 1800s, dentists originally used gold, which really would have been better had they not found that gold was too expensive to use in the mouth. And so we got off the gold standard. And guys from France came in and sold to the Americas, etc., something called Bell's putty, like ding ding, Bell's putty, which was basically silver coins melted and mixed in with the infamous mercury. So gold was replaced by silver and mercury. And you could fill the teeth in 2 minutes, and there was no drilling required. And that was one of the things they did because gold was too expensive. The problem is they didn't really understand what they were doing, and there was so much mercury used in that process that the tooth would die. People would become sick. And in 1845, the American Society of Dental Surgeons, so look at that, 1845, Pasteur in France had just developed his microbial theories. For thousands of years, people have been on the teeth. And in 1845, in this country, the American Dental Society of Dental Surgeons, realizing how dangerous mercury was, banned the use of mercury fillings. And originally, these dentists were called quacks. It wasn't really a condescension, though, in a direct sense, because there's a word in Dutch called quacksalber, Quacksalber. And that in Dutch meant noisy peddler selling mercury contained in health potions. And mercury's often been used to kill infections. Mercury was used to kill syphilis. Mercury's been used in Eastern medicine as a poison to kill bad things in the body. But again, it's always, as with the teeth in 1830 and 40, it's a cost-effective issue. You don't want to kill too much of you. Now, you know that concept, chemotherapy. Chemotherapy kills cancer, but it kills too much of you, thus it's questioned. So back originally, mercury was looked upon in a similar vein, and ultimately, we banned it. So the bottom line was that mercury was cheaper than gold, and by 1899, now we're jumping ahead about 50 years, the American Dental Association had come into existence, oddly enough, pushing the mercury amalgam as the standard of care. Now what changed? Well, there was a dentist named G. V. Black, and he reformulated. They took a look at this problem with the mercury, and he reformulated the mercury filling, making them less toxic and longer lasting. So that problem that originally banned it, Black solved, and the ADA agreed, and that became the standard of care. That's when it really went into the backbone of American dentistry, just at the turn of the century. Now the problem was, and this is what you're not told, that to use mercury and make it secure in the tooth, in other words, to make the mercury amalgam secure so it wouldn't fall out, to work with the metal, you had to drill a much bigger hole than if the dentist had just used gold. So I'm going to repeat that. To make the dental choice, that being mercury, effective in terms of technique, dentists found that they had to drill a much bigger hole in the tooth as opposed to gold. That's big, because that means you get much closer to the crown, and the crown gets much closer to the root canal once the decay hits the pulp cavity and the high-speed drill inflames the nerve, and ultimately the nerve dies. So this is a little thing, but it's a big thing. In the name of using a lower-cost tool, that being mercury, we sacrificed enamel. Enamel we didn't have to take away, but now we do, because otherwise mercury won't work and gold too expensive. Cost-benefit. You have to look at medicine as cost-benefit. So I want to emphasize is that it's innocent that we used mercury in that sense. Is an innocent choice, because you've got to understand the way medicine works. Medicine takes research, and big boards or small boards of the higher-ups make decisions. And whatever goes into those decisions is not my point. Once it becomes a decision, it becomes a standard of care. And your dentist can innocently, just as any doctor can innocently, I've seen this mistake in chiropractic, do things that are not good, all in the name of what their teachers teach them. So I want you to get that concept. Now, a bigger thing. Mercury is a very expansive, heat-sensitive metal. And as any metal, mercury expands and contracts. So when the mercury filling expands and pushes out against the tooth, and then it retracts, it comes back, it leaves a little wedge between itself and the inner wall of the enamel that it was once theoretically bound to. Now, this newly formed crevice, as the mercury pulls away from the inner wall of the enamel, is the perfect place for more bacteria to invade and perpetuate the decay cycle. Now, this is one of the real drawbacks of mercury. So one practical tip, and we'll give you about 6 or 7 vital ones in the show today, find a dentist who will do what we call a caries dye stain test, where a red dye is applied to the tooth surface, and where it sticks to the tooth, because lots of that dye is just going to wash off, but where it still sticks to the tooth is where the filling has pulled away from the enamel. And so that filling must be replaced with the resin filling, the plastic hybrid filling, or even gold if it's appropriate. Now, the next dental myth, exposed. I'm going to really explain why we really get tooth decay in the first place. And this has just gone out of dentistry. Again, you've got to get more educated. And understand that for a century now, a century and a half, since 1850, we've had an age-old debate between Louis Pasteur of France and Metchnikoff. And these two bigwigs of biological medicine, 150 years ago, had a different perspective on how one gets diseased. Now, Pasteur, a name you know much better than Metchnikoff, Pasteur said that the cause of disease or decay was the microbe, while Metchnikoff said that the environment or the terrain that created the right environment for the microbe to flourish, or I should say the wrong environment. So you had Pasteur stating, if you've got a problem, if you've got decay, if you've got disease, if you've got infection, kill the infection. The infection's the cause. And Metchnikoff, right from the beginning, was there to say, no, you have to change the geography. You have to change the terrain. You have to do things that starve out the microbe. And that was the beginning of modern medicine. So Pasteur would say, if you have a parasite, kill it with drugs. Or even kill it with herbs. While Metchnikoff would say, change the intestinal environment so the parasite has no place to live in it, and so it dies. And really, in the best of holistic medicine, we do both. We go after it with the herb, and then we change the environment. But I want to emphasize how often we forget to change the environment. We'll pay for the herb and let that do the job, and it doesn't do it completely. That's why lifestyle, education are always so critical. But the kill theory, or the Pasteur approach, has always been the medical model, while the infinitely more effective and sophisticated Metchnikoffian model, if I can call that, has not prevailed. And even holistic medicine, while it differs in terms of approach from allopathy, in so many ways is still always looking to kill the microbe. That's human nature. When something's wrong, we want to find it and we want to whack it. And it doesn't work that way. We're understanding these intelligences are way beyond our intelligences. 4 billion, 5 billion years. However you want to look at this, microbes are smart. They trade genes. They have sex. They create new species as fast as we create families. And we're always behind in this kill the microbe situation. Just now that we have the DNA techniques, we're watching these things evolve at frightening paces. Lyme disease in itself in 10 years has morphed 200 times. So this idea about kill the microbe, it's got a place. No two ways about it. No one should argue that. But Metchnikoff, change the environment. This you're going to see in the perception of how to work with chronic disease. Not acute, but chronic. You really got to start looking into that. Now, applied to dentistry, what this meant is that dentists are taught that the reason people get cavities is that the bacteria in the mouth metabolizes the sugars or the carbs, which break down to sugars.